ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey, I'm Dominique Bayens. Sam Hawley will be along in a tick. I just want to tell you about my new podcast, one of Australia's most baffling missing persons cases. In 2007, three adults and a five-year-old girl vanished amid rumours of bizarre behaviour, cults and dark secrets.
Daddy, stop doing that face.
I've been investigating for the new season of Expanse, The Nan Up 4. Search Expanse on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Part of the reason Donald Trump says he's gone to war with Iran is to destroy the nuclear threat it poses. But by starting the conflict, has he in that respect made the world less safe? Today, Kelsey Davenport from the Arms Control Association on why it could all lead to more nuclear weapons around the world. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Kelsey, we're going to consider what this war might mean for the nuclear ambitions of not just Iran, but other nations. Now, can we step back a moment? Because in June last year, of course, America attacked Iran. And after that, Donald Trump declared Iran's nuclear program was obliterated.
Tonight, I can report to the world that the strikes were a spectacular military success. Iran's key nuclear enrichment facilities have been completely and totally obliterated.
Just remind me what happened back then.
Well, in the lead up to the June 2025 strikes, Iran was on the threshold of nuclear weapons. But there was no indication, no intelligence suggesting that Iran was going to weaponize. And it was engaged in negotiations with the United States on a deal. But despite those negotiations, the United States struck several key nuclear facilities in Iran about a week after Israel launched a set of strikes against Iran that targeted some of the country's nuclear facilities. But the U.S. strike was really focused on three facilities, two where Iran had been enriching uranium, Natanz and Fordo. And the United States also struck the entrances to tunnels at the Esfahan nuclear complex. And subsequent reports from U.S. officials suggest that in those tunnels, Iran was storing its stockpile of enriched uranium. So in sum, the U.S. and Israeli strikes certainly damaged Iran's nuclear program, but it certainly did not obliterate it. Yeah. Key materials remained intact. Key technologies likely survived. And of course, Iran still had the expertise to rebuild.
So Trump did say the nuclear program had been destroyed. Now, we think that wasn't actually the case. And of course, a key aim of this war is also about Iran's nuclear capability. Now, do we have any idea at this point what nuclear sites have been hit so far by the Americans and Israelis?
So the U.S. and Israeli strike patterns to date debunk the idea that the nuclear threat was imminent, was pressing, and required this military response. Really, all we've seen are some strikes that appear to have been intended to make it harder to access Natanz. And there does appear to be some damage done to some buildings at the Esfahan nuclear complex. So minor damage to some of the sites, but nothing, again, that suggests kind of a concerted effort to block a weaponization attempt.
All right. So hidden deep underground, there's heavily enriched uranium, and that's really hard to get to.
Exactly.
All right. And how important then is it that during this war, that that enriched uranium is secured in some way?
Well, it's important for several reasons. I mean, first, if Iran is storing a lot of uranium enriched to 60%, 60% is just shy of weapons grade. Weapons grade is considered 90%. But if Iran is storing a lot of that material together and it is struck directly by a U.S. or Israeli strike, you know, there is a risk that that strike could begin a fission reaction, and then you'd have something akin to a nuclear explosion. But that's not the only risk. I mean, right now, you know, as a result of the June strikes, and currently because of this, these strikes going on now, you know, the IAEA is not actively monitoring Iran's nuclear program. They're not on the ground. Mm. There is a greater risk then that Iran could have diverted nuclear material to a covert facility. I mean, these canisters are very small. They're about the size of a scuba tank. So certainly, you know, the lack of monitoring that situation that's been created because of the strikes in June and these current strikes is increasing proliferation risks in some areas.
Kelsey, let's have a look now at what this means for the rest of the world and the nuclear ambitions of other nations. Now, the French president, Emmanuel Macron, he announced this week that he'll be expanding his nation's nuclear arsenal. Now, this was a speech, just to note, planned before the outbreak of the war.
D'augmenter le nombre de têtes nucléaires.
I have ordered an increase in the number of nuclear warheads in our arsenal. To be free, therefore, one must be feared, and to be feared, one must be powerful. This increase in our arsenal attests to this.
Cette augmentation de notre arsenal en témoigne.
What's he doing and why is he doing that?
Well, I think France's nuclear expansion has more to do with its perceived threats from Russia and legitimate questions about the value of, you know, the U.S. commitment to NATO and U.S. nuclear extended deterrent guarantees. Now, the Iran situation feeds into this because, you know, looking at the weeks leading up to June, the June strikes, and looking at the weeks leading up to the February strikes, I think the Trump administration demonstrated that the U.S. was not negotiating with Iran in good faith. And that continues to kind of play into this erosion of U.S. credibility and the questioning of U.S. alliance commitments. So certainly, you know, the Iran situation and, you know, the French decision to expand its arsenal is all part of this kind of re-questioning of the non-proliferation regime and the erosion of nuclear norms.
But there are many other nations, of course, that aspire to have nuclear weapons, and not always friendly ones, if you like. What lessons will they be taking from this war? Who should we be concerned about?
Well, I'm actually worried that states are going to take the wrong lesson. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at the Iranian case, I mean, Iran kind of went up to the technical threshold of nuclear weapons and tried to leverage its ability to quickly develop nuclear weapons to deter attacks. And we saw in June that that didn't work. We've seen again, you know, just, you know, a week ago that, you know, that didn't work. And Iran was attacked by two nuclear armed states, you know, Israel and the United States. So my concern is that going forward, you know, other countries who perceive nuclear weapons as beneficial are not going to bother to go to the threshold. They're going to go over the threshold and realize that it is only the possession of nuclear weapons that is going to deter future attacks, and that the possession of nuclear weapons is more necessary now because they have lost faith in security alliances and U.S. extended deterrence guarantees. So I actually think the next round of proliferators is going to look significantly different than the recent cases we've been concerned about, you know, Iran, Syria, Libya, Iraq in the 90s. And it's going to look much more like U.S. allies and partners. You know, South Korea, I think, is a real risk. Saudi Arabia. And we're hearing more discussion about nuclear weapons in Europe than, you know, we have in decades. So that's a shift in the proliferation landscape that I think the United States is not ready for.
They could also look to history, of course, couldn't they? Because they could see what happened to Libya. It abandoned its nuclear weapons program and then its dictator was toppled. Ukraine, it gave up its nuclear weapons and was invaded by Russia.
Yeah, and you contrast that with North Korea, the country that was not willing to give up its nuclear program, that weaponized, you know, has built a nuclear deterrent capable of threatening the United States. And its territorial integrity is still intact.
All right. Well, Kelsey, let's then return to Iran. Now, if the regime isn't toppled and it remains intact at this moment, of course, will it race to redevelop any nuclear capability it has lost? And will its ambition be to have a nuclear bomb and to build that very quickly?
I'm not sure we'd be likely to see the regime dash for a nuclear weapon, you know, as quickly as possible. I mean, in a post-conflict scenario, I mean, even if the regime survives, it's going to be facing a multitude of internal and external threats. And I think any overt move to weaponization is only going to invite, you know, further strikes. But I wouldn't be surprised if Iran, you know, rethinks its nuclear doctrine and perhaps tries to build a parallel covert program with the aim of weaponization. You know, if they're prioritizing secrecy, it would likely take longer to get to that point of being able to weaponize. Or they could decide that they want to exit the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty and develop nuclear weapons. But I certainly think there is going to be a serious rethinking of the nuclear doctrine if the regime survives, and that, you know, if there is no kind of short-term move to the bomb, which again I think is less likely, you know, we're going to need to watch the proliferation risk over the medium and long term and consider and look carefully at what Iran may be trying to do covertly.
And what if the regime does fall, which of course Donald Trump wants to see that? It doesn't necessarily, does it, mean that all nuclear ambitions would fall with it?
Yeah, you're right. It absolutely does not. I mean, if the regime falls, you know, a number of Iran analysts predict that some type of military leadership, dictatorship, you know, under the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps is the most likely regime to come to power. And it is factions of the military that have been the strongest voices in cautioning against any diplomacy with the West, you know, in deliberately painting the United States as a threat to the Islamic Republic, and have called for weaponization. So weaponization might be more likely in that scenario. But even if the regime were to topple and a liberal democracy were to emerge, I mean, democracies choose nuclear weapons as well. And a new government that feels fragile, that feels like it is in a region surrounded by adversaries, a nuclear deterrent, you know, might be attractive in that scenario.
Well, Kelsey, what do you think? Is the world safer from the nuclear weapon threat with this action against Iran, or does it just really make us less safe in terms of that nuclear threat?
I think it makes us less safe in the short term, in the medium term, and the long term. Mm. U.S. and Israeli airstrikes cannot destroy the Iranian nuclear program. So no matter how this ends, no matter who is in power in Iran at the end of a conflict, there is still going to be a proliferation risk, and the U.S. is going to have to think about how to address that. But also, you know, as I said before, if we look outside Iran, you know, these strikes really send the wrong message to the broader international community about U.S. credibility, U.S. willingness to negotiate on nonproliferation in good faith. And I think it risks tipping more countries to make the decision that they might need their own nuclear deterrence in order to, you know, deter future attacks. And in my assessment, you know, more nuclear weapons makes us all less safe.
Kelsey Davenport is the Director of Non-Proliferation Policy at the Arms Control Association. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed and Cinnamon Nippard. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Coney. I'm Sam Hawley. ABC News Daily will be back again on Monday. Thanks for listening.